Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. To the show, we have Josh Centers. He's a prepper and an author. This is Technotopia. This episode of Technotopia is sponsored by CheapTranscription.io.
CheapTranscription offers 10 cent per minute transcriptions using our happy robots or 85 cents per minute using our human assistants. CheapTranscription.io is cheaper and faster than everyone else. CheapTranscription.io.
This episode of Technotopia is brought to you by Typewriter.plus. Typewriter.plus is a full-service editorial agency that brings amazing editors from places like the New York Times and TechCrunch to work on your writing. Need a blog post, a white paper, a presentation? The Typewriter team can write or edit anything on nearly any topic. Visit them at Typewriter.plus for a free quote. That's Typewriter.plus. Typewriter.plus. Welcome back to Technotopia, the podcast about a better future. I'm John Biggs. Today on the show, we have Josh Centers. He's a contributor to The Preppers, and he's also managing editor of Tidbits. So you're involved in prepping for the inevitable destruction of Apple, right? Is that
yeah.
the way it's all going to happen?
Yeah, they're going to go out of business any day now.
rather than talk about the new iOS and macOS, which I'm fairly excited about, actually, let's talk a little bit about your prepper experience.
All right.
So the podcast, obviously, about how the future is not going to be awful. But I've been watching you on Twitter and the prepper movement kind of says that, yeah, everything is going to be awful. So how do we find a happy medium so I just don't become completely depressed?
Well, you know, here's the thing. A lot of people like to think of preppers as pessimistic. And on the contrary, I think we're actually pretty optimistic, but we try to be realistic about actual risks. So, it's a funny thing. And, you know, if you read many books about survival, one of the things that they talk about extensively is the number one trick to surviving any kind of survival situation is a positive mental attitude. It's something that survivalist Cody Lundeen calls a party on attitude. Like, oh, I lost my lighter, can't start a fire. Well, party on. Oh, my bear ate my food. Well, party on. And it's funny that, you know, so I'm in the Slack for the prepared, and everyone there is just so positive. Like, there's so much positive energy because, you know, I feel like it's a sense of empowerment. It's a sense of, okay, there's a pandemic, there's a civil unrest, there's all this crazy stuff going on in the world, but hey, guess what? We're prepared for it. You know, we've seen it coming. We may not be perfectly prepared, and it's certainly not how we want things to be, but, you know, we feel a bit ahead of the curve. You know, we feel better capable of tackling these challenges as they come up. And, you know, it doesn't have to necessarily be doomsday prepping, right? I mean, even in the best of times, we have things like ice storms, we have things like tornadoes, earthquakes, fires. And so those are all things that even if you're just a normal person, you want to be prepared for that stuff because it's going to happen to you eventually. It's going to affect you in some way.
Mm-hmm. What is the idea of prepping? What are you guys expecting to happen?
Right.
I guess you could say.
Well, you know, it really depends a bit on your philosophy, but you know, overall, you know, there's a few things you can do that are like universal to all situations. You know, like one thing I recommend, because there's a lot of new preppers now and they're coming to me and asking me like, well, where should I start? It's so overwhelming. Where do I start? And, you know, the best place I think everyone can start at is to assemble an individual first aid kit. Mm-hmm. And if you go to theprepared.com, we have a guide on doing that written up by, we had a whole group of people that we consulted to come up with this list of things you can cram in a little sack and be ready for most medical emergencies. And mm-hmm. I think that's a great thing to have because it's things like Band-Aids, Benadryl, scissors, tourniquet, you know, stuff that you really should have on hand anyway, regardless of your, you know, situation. Because, I mean, whether you're camping or whether you're just, you know, at home or wherever, you know, there's going to come a time when you need that first aid kit. So that's a really good place to start. Another thing I recommend for everybody is to have a stockpile of food and ideally water. Because, you know, for instance, just before this pandemic hit, we already had a pretty good stockpile, but we stocked up more. We got a bunch of beans, a bunch of rice, before, you know, people started really panic buying. Probably the best prep I made out of the whole COVID-19 thing was like just a day before the stores started getting run on here where I am. We ordered our usual order of toilet paper and paper towels and wet wipes from Sam's Club. And of course, you know, we buy in bulk anyway. And so that's, you know, we haven't had a problem with toilet paper through this whole toilet paper shortage. I did stock up on hand sanitizers that, you know, we never had worries about that stuff. And we had plenty of beans and rice and canned goods and things like that. And if you can, another good thing is to have a garden, to have some chickens. You know, I've planted an enormous garden this year, much mm-hmm. larger than I ever have before. Of course, not everyone can do that. And I did get a new batch of chickens. I've had some laying chickens for the past 3 years, and they're getting a little old and don't lay as well as they used to. That's a good thing to do. But, you know, and those are the sorts of things that will prepare you for a lot of different situations. You know, if you have, you know, water, food, first aid supplies, you know, those are things that are going to apply in any situation. Now, of course, the one of the big focuses in the prepping world is the bug out bag, right? Like, mm-hmm. you know, that's the stereotypical prepper. Like Ron Swanson hears that, you know, his wife's coming back into town. He pulls an Alice pack out of a cubby hole in his office and runs out the door and goes to his cabin in the woods. That's a good thing to have too, but you know, I don't always say that's the first thing you should have, if you're a prepper. You know, I've been at this for a few years now, and I'm just now starting to build a serious bug out bag, and largely because, you know, being a professional prepper now, I feel like I have to have one. But you know, the reality is we moved, out into the country 3 years ago, and that was kind of my bug out. That was kind of like part of my prep. I'm like, I'm getting away mm-hmm. from the city. I want to be able to, I want to have arable land. I want to have, you know, access to water sources. I want to have access to, you know, be able to raise chickens, you know, wood, things like that, natural resources. But, you know, so for not, bug out bag isn't the best thing for everyone. But now if you're like in a city, you know, I know somebody recently who was in Minneapolis, and she wasn't a prepper at the time, but she lived right next to that Fifth Precinct they were trying to burn down. Mm-hmm. And I think she finally got out and went to another state, but it's like, you know, guarantee you if she doesn't have a bug out bag now, she's going to have one. Mm-hmm. And so if you're in a city, I think it's a good idea, but you know, part of the thing with a bug out bag is, you know, we'll tell you, okay, put a tarp in there, put a tin in there, water filters. But you know, the reality is, you know, and I have all that stuff. The reality is though, if you're fleeing your house due to civil unrest, earthquake, fire, whatever, you may not want to go on a camping trip right then and there, right? Like, mm-hmm. it's good to have those things, but you know, you want to have sane plans for things. And I would tell you, you know, we're both computer guys, you know, and prepping can extend to your computer use too. You know, for instance, at Tidbits, where I'm also the managing editor, you know, for years we've told people, you know, two is one and one is none. And you want to have a bootable backup. You want to have a time machine backup, you know, assuming you're using a Mac. And you want to have some sort of offsite backup. You know, and that's a form of prepping in and of itself, because, you know, you never know when your SSD or your hard drive is going to go bad. Mm-hmm. You never know when you're going to have some sort of data loss. And so, you know, you want to try to imagine the realistic scenarios for you and your area and come up with mitigation strategies for them. So, you know, I don't act like, you know, oh, we're just prepared for everything, nothing bad can happen. But you want to have mitigation strategies for bad case scenarios. I mean, just like, you know, you probably have, if you have a car, you probably have insurance on it. You might have life insurance. You are supposed to have health insurance, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's all a form of prep, too. And, you know, one of the things to talk about the prepared, too, is financial preparedness. You know, having an emergency fund, not being up to your eyeballs in debt if you can help it, you know. And that's another thing that gives you more flexibility if something bad happens. Like you lose your job, but you have 6 months of income socked away, then you're much better prepared to handle those stressors.
I think that's an interesting point. I think you're the idea that everybody is pretty relaxed is kind of important, because I mean you guys have tried to think through all the potential bad stuff that could happen, right? I mean, it's not like everybody's sitting there thinking to themselves that the world's going to end. It's basically more like, oh, if there's some issues, we have some alternatives here, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't know if you ever watched that Doomsday Preppers show. It was on the Discovery Channel. And, you know, they always had, like, some nutball on there. And a lot of people who call themselves preppers, I think, are just, you know, middle-aged white dudes who want an excuse as to why they buy so many guns. Like, oh, honey, I gotta buy this AR-15. We're going to have the communists coming in. You know, yeah, I need all these knives. You know, you never know when you need knives. You know, and there's some of that. There's some, you know, what you call LARPing. You know, and it's kind of given prepping a bad name. But, you know, really, prepping at its heart is just, you know, being a responsible adult, really, just, you know, understanding that there are some bad things that can happen, and to have the gear and the skills. And that's another thing, too. You know, preppers, you know, we get really focused on gear, but skills are every bit, if not more, important. Especially, you know, if you don't have the skills to use the gear, then, you know, what's the point? You know, things like marksmanship training, medic classes, you know, just this past weekend, I took I took my amateur radio tests, so now I'm a licensed general class operator with the FCC, you know, and that's just one extra little thing, you know, an extra notch in my belt. And you know, before that, a couple of years ago, I got certified in blacksmithing, you know, and I have an anvil and a forge, and you know, some scrap metal, and you know, there are various things, hooks and things I can make if I need them. You know, I've read dozens of books about gardening and horticulture and permaculture and chickens and things like that. So, you know, the skill thing is something that you shouldn't ignore, you know, and, you know, just being able to go out, for instance, with a ferro rod and some tinder and start a fire, you know, that's a good thing to practice if you can, because you never know when you'll be in that situation. So, you know, I don't think so much as collecting stuff, you know, collecting gear, but I do take a lot of pride in, you know, collecting skills and knowing how to do things.
Do you think there's going to be a general flight from big cities out into, I guess you're in a more rural area, right? Mm-hmm. So it's, do you think that's a thing that's going to happen? One of the things that I recall was the Foxfire books back in the 70s. I don't know if you ever saw those.
Yeah, I have them.
yeah. So those were the those were a reaction to the go-go 70s. Everybody's snorting cocaine and dancing to disco, and then you had had some people who were in Park Slope for a minute, and then they moved out to Tennessee and started learning how to, I don't know, sing the blues and take care of chickens. Is that going to be something that happens generally, or do you think that's sort of an outlier?
It's already happening. We have a lot of those people that came here in the 70s where I live now. You know, we have a little hippie community out in a town called Red Bowling Springs. Sort of the ringleader is this guy named Jeff Poppin. He's called the Barefoot Farmer. And we actually have a CSA from him. We get a huge, like, bushel of vegetables from him every week. So, something already happening. I'm actually going to write something at the Prepared about this. So if you're listening to this, keep your eyes peeled on that, because I do want to give people some realistic expectations about if they move to the country. Because we've had this problem for years. You know, I like to joke on Twitter, you might have seen this, about the Californians invading. And it's true. We have like Nashville is full of people from California. And then they move there and they gentrify Nashville. And then they force the people already living in Nashville out. And so now we have people coming out to my area, because they can't afford to live in Nashville anymore. And then we have some of the Californians coming out, and they come out and they have certain ideas about the world, and what they meet does not match their expectations of how the world should look. And so they have one of two reactions, usually a little bit of both. They will complain bitterly and endlessly about how awful we are and how awful it is living around a bunch of rednecks. And we need to change things. We need to bring civilization to you. You know, they kind of act like colonizers. So, you know, I like to set realistic expectations for people about things. You know, and also, you know, I think it's just good manners if you move to a place. You know, if I were going to move to France, I would try to learn French and just try to get along with the French. I would never move to France, but you know, if you move to a place, you know, you want to understand that you moved there for a reason. You left the place you're coming from for a reason. And so, you know, at the very least, do some basic research on how things are like, visit the place. We have a lot of people that move out here who've never even visited Tennessee. And, mm-hmm. And they're like, I can't believe it's like this. What? Could you not? Do you not have an internet? Do you not have a Wikipedia? I mean, like, I'll give you an example. And I'm not defending anything here. I'm just stating how it is.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you come out to rural Tennessee, you're going to see Confederate flags and Trump signs. You're going to see them. You know, it's part of the culture. You know, and some people come out here and they see that stuff and they start just freaking out. I'm like, well, where do you think you came to? You came to Tennessee, man. So, you know, and it's just one of those things, like, you need to understand an area before you come there. And then, you know, a lot of people come out here and they're dealing with loneliness. Because, you know, I can't speak for all rural areas, but, you know, at least in Southern culture, people are very close to their families. Like, you know, we have friends, but it's not friends like, you know, if you're in Brooklyn or somewhere, you know, oh, yeah, we do stuff with our friends every weekend. Well, your friends may be hang out with their parents that weekend, even though they're 40 years old, you know. You know, so if you don't have your own family, you might feel kind of left out. And families around here tend to be kind of insular. You know, like, oh, this is a family only event. We don't want a bunch of outsiders here, you know, that kind of deal. And it's just things to know. And I want to write a lot more about that in detail to prepare it, because it's very frustrating for me. You know, I've lived here my whole life, more or less, and, you know, see people move out here. And first of all, you don't want to see someone move to your town and be unhappy. But also, I get tired of the complaining. Like, okay, well, you chose to move here. Nobody forced you to move here. Mm-hmm. You know, you weren't forcibly relocated. You came here, and now you don't like it. And sometimes I argue with these people. I'll be like, okay, well, go home. Like, I can't afford to go home. Okay, well, I mean, what do you want me to do, man? You know, I think it's just a good practice in prepping and in life to, you know, find the positive, you know, have a positive mental attitude. Don't just be like, oh, man, everyone around here is, you know, an idiot, which, I mean, I feel that way sometimes, but I'm from here. So, you know, it's a bit of a difference, right? You know?
So that's interesting. So it's going to be it'll be a cultural thing, unless we bring our cultures with us by like sitting in VR goggles and just, and never leaving the house.
Some people do that. You know, I know some people, they're really big into the VR thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. I wonder what the answer is. Is the answer that we all move out to rural Tennessee and completely gentrify the place and put up some things and then just turn it into another hotbed of disease and destruction? Or does it take on what it can hold?
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. It's one of those things, like, there's a way I like things to be, and then there's the way things actually are. And unfortunately, a lot of people move here, and they just want to make it like where they moved from, and without having the recognition of, oh, maybe there are some things wrong with the place I moved from, and that's why I moved. You know, I guess that's just a human thing. You know, Thomas Jefferson, who, you know, I realize is problematic, but he had this vision of America as yeoman farmers, right? Like, everyone just have a little plot of land and work their plot of land. And I think ultimately that may not be the worst vision for the country, but I don't know if it's realistic. You know, I would like to see, just in general, more Americans become just a little bit more self-reliant. Now, I understand self-reliant, you know, a lot of people criticize that term because they say, well, you always rely on something from outside, right? There's a supply chain, there's a government, and that's true. And maybe the better term would be what Nassim Taleb calls anti-fragile, right? Mm-hmm. Like, make yourself just a little less fragile, you know, make it, you know, understand how to grow and preserve food, even in a small space, you know, have some basic skills, if nothing else, just like be able to repair things around your house, being able to, you know, make things with your own two hands, you know, communication skills, first aid skills, you know, things like that make you a little, at least just a little less, prone to, you know, bad effects from shocks and stressors. Yeah, I think that would be, if I have one thing I would encourage people to do, that would be it. You know, get yourself some skills and you know, maybe toughen yourself up a little bit and you know, become just a little less fragile. You know, have a sense of how reliant you are on the supply chain, on the outside world, and take a few steps to make yourself a little less reliant, you know.
How how far do people have to go? I mean, I think there's the the gravy seal, right? The guy with the AR-15 and the and the bulletproof vest and the camo who comes to who waves the "Don't tread on me" flag or the Confederate flag.
Yeah.
How far do we have to go that far? Do we need a hipster version of that?
No flags required. Okay, so I've seen you distilling stuff in your backyard. I'm not sure what you're distilling. It's none of my business. But, you know, so that's an example. You know, there's an example of a useful skill, and you're in a small space, at least where I can see, and you're doing something to make yourself a little less reliant, you know? Now, the stuff about the, you know, the AR-15, the armor and all that, you know, again, that's sort of the stereotype of prepping, right? But, you know, Now, I encourage responsible firearm ownership. Okay, not being an idiot with guns, but you know, here's the thing about firearms is that it's another tool. You know, I have some firearms. I like them. I try to maintain them. I enjoy shooting them. However, I also have a bunch of garden hose that I enjoy using just as much, and I enjoy maintaining. And they're probably even more valuable in many contexts than the rifles are. Right. So I think that's a healthy way of looking at it. You know, like, I might get some body armor at some point, but it's not my highest priority. I mean, quite frankly, if I have an angry mob at my house as far out as I live, and I need, you know, 300 rounds of, you know, AR-15 ammo and body armor, I'm probably just up the creek anyway. So, I mean, let's be realistic. Now, a more realistic scenario, you know, people keep talking about the boogaloo. We're going to have a boogaloo, you know, like a second Civil War. And the thing, and as somebody who studied the original Civil War, the thing I worry about isn't necessarily, you know, people have this fantasy, I'm going to go out in the field and shoot my enemies and, you know, blah, 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 you know, that's childish. What I'm worried about is the supply chain. Like, okay, I live in a remote town, we have a Walmart. Okay, what if the trucks can't get to the Walmart? What if the UPS trucks can't get to the town? You know, those are the things I worry about. So, you know, I think about things like, okay, so I have my chickens, but see, even the chickens are problematic because they need food, right? They can forage, but they're not going to get enough calories to put on enough weight for meat or to get enough calories to lay a bunch of eggs. So they need that sort of high calorie food. So that's, I mean, now it's easier to store that food than human food. So there's an advantage. You know, I do have the big garden, but then I have to think about, okay, how do I protect from bugs? How do I protect from meth heads? How do I protect from deer? You know, things like that. So, you know, you have to think in terms of system and think, you know, and my biggest worries always come back to the supply chain. And we've seen from the COVID-19 pandemic just how fragile that supply chain can be. And so that's something I think everyone should be considering. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend that we're cut off from the supply chain because, I mean, right now we got like a dozen boxes from Amazon sitting outside. So, you know, but you need to think about, you know, if the supply chain were cut off, you know, like, how could I survive? What would I do? What could I do? As an example, so let's say so we have city water here. You know, we have a lot of luxuries here on the farm, but, you know, I think about what if the city water were cut off. Well, okay, I got a spring nearby. It's not technically my property, but, you know, it's there. I have a creek. I have water filters. I have ways of boiling water, you know. Okay, so what if we don't have heat? What, you know, to cook with? Okay, well, I have propane. I'm surrounded by wood. You know, I have ways of burning that. And, you know, now it's a problem if I have to heat the house because I don't have a wood stove, but, you know, one thing at a time, right? So it's just it's just little things like that. And, you know, I'm not going to pretend that we're totally resilient. I don't think anyone is, unless you're like a multi-millionaire or billionaire. Even then you might not be. But, you know, it takes a lot of resources. So you just have to think in terms of priorities. And, you know, that's why I tell people, start with the first aid kit. You can't go wrong with that. You know, no one's ever said to themselves, I'm sorry I spent so much money on my first aid kit.
What happens when it becomes, I mean, to a degree, you've kind of gentrified the idea of prepping, right? So you're a knowledge worker, you're online most of the time. You know quite a bit about this, but what happens when it's a guy like you who can work from home, who can produce, who basically has the internet, have knowledge at his fingertips. Mm-hmm. And then the rest of the world has to do exactly what you just did, and doesn't have the ability or the cash or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah. You're speaking to the problem of scalability. And that's a real problem. And, you know, like I'm under no delusions or illusions. You know, I am fairly privileged, you know, when, you know, I've been working remote for most of my adult life. And so, you know, when this pandemic hit, well, I'm still working from home. I'm not one of these people who suddenly found themselves out of work or forced out into the world to brave the virus. My wife's a school teacher. So when her school shut down, she was home. So you know, I have a lot of advantages in my court, and I realize that. But every person has to just sort of evaluate their situation and just say, what can you do realistically to mitigate things? You know, and the other thing to consider too is that this is not something you do overnight. You know, I've been at this. I really got into prepping after watching all the stuff in Ferguson, Missouri, back in 2014, and just watching the live streams, all that. It just kind of broke my brain. And so you just need to think about, like, well, what can I do today? What can I do with the resources I have? Now, a lot of people want to move out to the country and they can't, you know, and so be it. And, you know, I know a lot of people who would like to have more firearms and there's laws and restrictions against that. So you just have to think about, and sometimes you have to get creative. Like, I know some people, they're not allowed to have firearms, but they can have crossbows, right? So I actually know a guy, his dad shot a burglar with a crossbow back in the day. I'm going to tell you, I've seen what happens when somebody gets shot with a compound bow or a crossbow. I'd rather be shot with a gun. It's brutal. Absolutely brutal. But just, you know, think about ways to be creative. Like, you know, like for instance, buying 50 pounds of beans and 50 pounds of rice and buying some food safe buckets and some Mylar bags and putting the food in there and sealing them up. It doesn't take a lot of space. It doesn't take a lot of money. It doesn't take a lot of time. So that's a really simple thing you can do. Just having like buying a 5-gallon water container. I think we recommend one at the prepared, you know, buy a 5-gallon water container, fill it with water, keep it, you know, keep it in a bathroom or somewhere in case your water gets cut off. You know, that there's, you don't have to be rich or especially privileged to be a prepper. You know, it doesn't take, I mean, we all started somewhere. So don't think, you know, you see somebody like, oh man, he's got body armor and 500 AR-15s and, you know, 12 years of storable food and 800 gallons of water. And you don't have to, you know, that guy didn't start there. So, you know, don't think you necessarily have to be one of these, you know, Gadsden flag waving, you know, I mean, at the prepared, you know, I wouldn't call anyone there right wing. You know, most people there they're kind of left libertarian, if anything. You know, so you know, it doesn't really, you know, your politics don't really matter. You know, I mean, maybe if you get in some of the prepping communities, like I've been looking at the ham radio stuff, and there's a prepper there's a prepper net on shortwave. It's all like we're right wing conservative Christians, you know, and all that, you know. So that might not be the scene for you. But you know, you don't necessarily have to be in a scene, you know, just get the basic preparations for your family and you know, just kind of move from there. And the thing about prepping too, is all people describe as a hobby, but it's really almost more of a meta hobby because, you know, like some of the things that can include is like, you know, amateur radio, gardening, you know, firearms, you know, that's like three hobbies right there. So it's, I like to think of it as a way of approaching life, you know, and the Tlaib book, Anti-Fragile, I think that's a really good book for anyone interested in prepping. He doesn't really talk about prepping, but he talks about, and I haven't finished reading it yet, so don't quiz me on the book, but he talks about just in general, like different systems that are anti-fragile systems that actually get better under stress. And he gives a lot of examples of that and, you know, explains some of the ways that you can make yourself more anti-fragile. And it's a great mindset to approach when you're developing any of your own systems, like you're developing a first aid kit, a bug out bag, you know, you're setting up computer backups, you know, and you think about what's the worst that can happen? How can I mitigate that? How can I make, you know, my systems more robust? How can I make my systems even anti-fragile?
All right. Well, that's a good point. We can add that to our. I'm gonna make a Brooklyn Preppers movement. We're just gonna store a bunch of rosé in a bucket
brewing beer, making moonshine.
Making moonshine. I got my wine in the basement.
Hey, see, the
I think the trick is the reason why I feel like I feel comfortable talking about this stuff is that I grew up in Ohio. My dad had guns in the. My dad had guns around the house, not just in the house. Just like he hit them around because he figured that there, at some point something was going to happen and he was going to have to, I don't know, come out guns blazing.
Right.
So that kind of attitude is familiar. But I think basically what you're saying is just create a nice bunch of Boy Scout merit badges for adults and say here's how to be a mensch when shit goes down. I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great idea. We should start like a grown-up version of the Boy Scouts.
All right. Well, I think we've just created a new business.
All right.
Josh, where can people read what you're writing?
All right. My prepper stuff is at theprepared.com. I'm redoing my personal website, and that's going to be at joshcenters.com, and I'll have a blog there, and I have a bunch of old blog posts. They're terrible, but you can read them if you're interested. And if you want to read my stuff about Apple, that's at tidbits.com. And also, I've written a bunch of books about various Apple things like iOS and preview mm-hmm. notes, and that's at takecontrolbooks.com.
All right, very cool. Josh Centers, thanks for joining us on Technotopia. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me, John.
Perfect. This has been Technotopia. I'm John Biggs. We will see you next week.
Technotopia is brought to you by Happy Fun Corp. Happy Fun Corp is a design-driven technology company in Brooklyn, New York that specializes in building mobile and web applications for startups and Fortune 500 companies. Whether it's a new mobile or web application that will help people experience the internet in a fun new way, or software that will interface with a new piece of top-secret hardware, Happy Fun Corp is always up to the challenge. Big or small, Happy Fun Corp loves building software and loves working with great people. Come build with them. HappyFunCorp.com.